It's been a ridiculous and confusing past few days. Cancellations, reschedules, who's backing into a spot. Let's try and make some sense of this and bring in our friend who covers the Ducks for The Athletic. On Twitter, use the handle at Tyson Alger. Tyson, let's start with a personal note. How are you and yours holding up as we hit mid-December, Crazy Town 2020?
You know what? We're doing just fine. I think it'll be a little bit easier if you know what exact days you're working this week. It looked like the game was going to be Saturday. Now it's Friday, and I'm not even traveling for it. So shout out to all the people who are having to schedule all the itineraries for these teams with all the TBAs going on.
You know what? Everybody talks about this year needs an asterisk. This year needs that zapper they had from Men in Black to just erase it from our memories. Might be more appropriate.
Yeah, it's I have a hard time summing up this year because like the games kind of technically count, I guess. And I mean, football's been played, and it's hard to say that, you know, what the coaches are planning for and the players have done, like, doesn't mean anything. But I think in the long run, I think as soon as the calendar turns on this year, it's going to be a pretty easy one to forget in terms of just everything that's happened, man.
You know, sometimes I get sucked in, but I heard some Duck fans claiming Washington could have played Saturday. They backed out to lock up their spot in the title game. I know you engage on social media. How much of that crossed your timeline? And on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being tinfoil hat absurd, would you make of people thinking that these high-level competitors suddenly didn't want to compete at the highest level?
Yeah, I thought that was ridiculous. I mean, the Pac-12 and all these teams and players and fans were just begging for any games, you know, in October when it looked like there wasn't going to be any. And then just to think that, like, there would be gamesmanship going on with canceling a rivalry game in your final game of the year, like, that just didn't make sense to me. And, it got pretty loud at times, and I took a little heat last week because after the game was canceled and it was before the Colorado-USC game, I wrote a column saying that if USC and Colorado were both undefeated, I felt that they should have played each other in the title game. Like, it would have been unfair to Oregon without having the opportunity to play Washington to advance to that game, but I would just feel bad if there was a undefeated team in the South sitting there on the sideline. I mean, I got hit on by a lot of people about, like, tradition and how could you go against the tradition of a South playing the North, but A, the Pac-12 is only, like, 10 years old, so there's not a whole lot of tradition there anyways, and B, like, if you're going to do something, this is the year to do it, and it is, the rules have seemingly been made up each week as it goes. So, it just felt like that was the right thing at the time. But obviously, Utah solved that problem by beating Colorado over the weekend. But it's been an interesting couple of weeks to read the mentions and the emails and the comments.
Yeah, how dare we try and impede on the great tradition of the college football playoff that's been going on since January of 2015. Unbelievable. You know, I saw in your mailbag a Twitter follower named Alec asked you, so what's the most 2020 outcome for this season? And there are a lot of ways to go, you know, from the making it all the way to Southern California and just canceling the game. I liked your alternative theory. What was your preferred answer there?
Yeah, it's going to be Oregon and USC play. Everything's going to go off as planned, and it's going to be like a 6-3 Red Box Bowl-esque game. I think that's the perfect way for the season to end with, because I mean, like, if you look at this game, like, I had my qualms about whether Oregon was technically worthy of being in that game, but I think without question, Oregon and USC are the two premier programs in this conference. I think, you know, by some of their up and down this year, I think Oregon can play a real competitive game. I think they win that game, but like, it would just feel fitting if they just played a terrible game, like on national television, and like the Pac-12 is like, we got our best programs here, and it's just a game of kicks. That feels like it perfect way for this year to end.
Oh, Trojans, Ducks in a battle of field goals. Wouldn't miss it for the world.
Yeah, let's maybe throw a safety in there, too, or something, you know.
6-5 final, I'm with you.
Yeah.
You know, I know the circumstances are nuts, but aside from the occasional Stanford, you know, this century, you mentioned that the banner's been carried first by USC, then Oregon, but they've never met in this game. So setting aside, you know, all the nonsense and the joking around, I mean, I'm thinking it's pretty cool to get Ducks Southern Cal for a trip to a major bowl.
Oh, absolutely, because, you know, throw out what's happened this year, you know, as we talked about for the last Oregon for the last 15 years and USC throughout its history, it's like these are the two teams that have been kind of running the show in this conference lately. And I think they're, if you take a look at the recruiting rankings and just like the way the programs are trending, I think they're going to be the two ones that duke it out here in the future. And so to be able to have this game here where, like you said, they haven't met in this thing before. And I think it's the best case scenario for the Pac-12, just because USC is a national audience, has a national presence regardless, and I think Oregon, just with the way that they, you know, coming off the Rose Bowl win, and then you throw into the mix like all the Mario Cristobal to Auburn chatter, and it just has a lot of storylines. You know, I think it's a much more sellable game than if USC was playing Colorado.
Now, I'm with you there. We continue with Tyson Alger of The Athletic. You know, leading up to this season, I heard the word reload, not just from Duck fans, regional, national analysts, talking about the great recruiting classes, but I thought the reality was 5 new linemen, new quarterback, 3 opt-outs in the secondary, all big playmakers. You lose the heart and soul of the defense and Troy Dye. Tyson, with hindsight, logical to think that some drop-off was reasonable and some folks maybe got a little overly hopeful?
Yeah, and like I would include myself in there, too. This defense has been worse than I anticipated, but like, again, I go back to, like, I don't know how much stock you take out of this just because, you know, teams are waking up on game day and not knowing exactly who they're going to be able to have on their team. And in some cases, they'll wake up 2 days before game day and not know who they're playing. And so, you know, the mixture of just personnel and availability and planning and just, like, things down to, like, building team chemistry through COVID protocols and all that. Like, I think there's so many things going against this year that, like, I don't think you can take a complete barometer of which way a program's trending. Now, that's not to say, like, some of the things this year, like, you know, I do think that we over, just kind of glazed over the fact that Javon Holland was one of the best nickelbacks in the country, or that Troy Dye had led the team in tackles for 4 years, or that, you know, Thomas Graham had started at corner for 4 straight years. Like, experience matters, and this specifically was a year where you can gain experience, but it's going to come at a cost, because the way that Oregon lost to Cal and Oregon State, like, in any other year, they'd have some time after that to kind of regroup and rebuild and whatnot. But as soon as that Cal game was over, that was their last game of the regular season here after the Washington canceled. So it's just a really tough season, especially for young players, to get that trial by fire experience. So I don't think this year was a complete wash, because, like, that experience will carry over to next year. But I think I'll be a little bit more cautious going into next season with predicting how great the defense is going to be.
So if you consider the defense played a backup against Stanford and UCLA, a first-time starter against the Beavs and Washington State, then Chase Garbers of Cal missed the Huskies, and now they face Keaton Slovis of USC. He hit 70% of his throws, got a good touchdown-to-pick ratio. He has been steely in the clutch. So safe to say, whoever the D has faced so far, this guy is next level.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's like it's kind of amazing when you put the list down there of like who Oregon's avoided. Outside of UCLA, every team Oregon's faced had a bottom half offense in the Pac-12, and when they played UCLA, like you said, they didn't face their starting quarterback. So it's this defense has given up, I think it's like almost 10 points a game more than it was a year before, and they really haven't faced a good team, like a really good offense yet. And I mean, USC comes in, and like outside of Slovis, I mean, this is just like the most talented team outside, other than Oregon, like in the Pac-12. Like they have skill position players all over the field, like high level recruits, and then you throw in a quarterback who's playing as well as anybody in the country right now. And I mean, when you take that into account while watching what Oregon's offense looked like in the second half of that Cal game, like I think USC should definitely be the favorite team coming into this. Although I do think that that offensive output against Cal was a little bit more of a blip than like a trend. Like I expected this young offense to have some struggles this year. It just happened that it happened to be in a game where the Ducks could have cleanly clinched the North if they would have won it.
Right. Yeah, you know, I said that the better Oregon teams, that, you know, team goes on the road to OSU, and I know the road is a little different now, score 38 points and lose, then they next week they go on the road, only give up 21 points and lose. It's like, historically, Oregon mostly wins both those games. To lose them both is like something I think kind of caught Oregon fans off guard. That makes sense?
Yeah, and that's kind of what I based my argument off of making the case for USC Colorado in the Pac-12 South if they were both undefeated, because like Oregon had multiple chances to win this thing. I mean, if they don't allow, what was it, like 21 points in the fourth quarter to Oregon State, like they're in the Pac-12 title game. If they score 5 points in the second half against Cal, they're in the Pac-12 title game. Like they had winnable moments, and this was a season where you knew that every single game wasn't guaranteed. Like there was a very probable chance that Oregon was never going to play Washington just based on the stats of how this year's gone. And so like those were moments that the Ducks needed to convert on, and they didn't. And it's just so funny that like it's the opposite sides of the field that cost them in back-to-back weeks. You had the defense in against Oregon State, and then the offense just completely laid a nothing burger against Cal.
I love the nothing burger. Final thought for Tyson Alger, The Athletic. I want to talk about another Tyler Shuck. Of course, coaches and teammates talk up their guy, and you hear about how he was practicing, how his leadership had grown, and I think we've seen flashes of special with the wheels and the arm, some rookie mistakes, and then of course you get the loons who felt he should have been pulled. Overall, how would you evaluate his play as a first-year starter?
I'd give him like a solid like B+. You know, I don't think he did enough to like, you know, completely wow everybody and go into next fall camp as like the unequivocal starter without any competition. I mean, that Ty Thompson coming in is awfully good and is a prospect the Ducks have never quite had before. But I mean, for the first 4 weeks of the season, Shuck was ranked within the top 10 in the country in terms of efficiency. I mean, he had multiple 300-yard games. He looked pretty efficient running more heads off RPO, and like, again, you have to boil it down to like 1 week he has Devin Williams to throw to, 1 week Devin Williams isn't playing. Like Micah Pittman's missed 90% of the season. The offensive line's been rotated in and out. Like this is a tough year, and I think Shuck's played awfully well considering all of that. And that's not to say that he's been perfect. Like we've both seen how, you know, he's had some costly turnovers, and just the offense wasn't moving in that second half against Cal. But I mean, go back and look at Justin Herbert's first 2 years. Like,
yep.
I think people, you know, all of a sudden have this rosy memory of Herbert being perfect all the time just because he's in Los Angeles slinging touchdowns left and right. But that's not how it was. Herbert had some bad games, and there was multiple games where the offense just completely did nothing. So, I think people just need to give Shuck some time because, I've seen enough this year to know that he can play at this level. I don't know if he's like a, you know, the quarterback that's going to lead you to a national championship, but I think he's certainly a starting quarterback on a conference contending team.
Well, I think too many people saw Herbert with the Chargers and thought Shuck should have played like that.
Yeah, well, Herbert didn't play like that.
No, that makes sense. Folks, he's Tyson Alger of The Athletic, at Tyson Alger. on Twitter, and we always appreciate his time, his lighthearted approach, and his insightful analysis, which is probably the best send-off you're going to get. Thanks for joining us, T.A. Have a great holiday, and once the madness settles down and, once we see what bowl they're going to, we'll talk again.
Sounds great, Steve. Thanks for having me.
All right, take it easy.